Hello and welcome everybody. This is Mary Elizabeth Bradford. I'm known as the Career Artisan, and today's Career Power Strategy session is about how to write powerful value proposition letters, or what I call today's cover letter. So thank you for joining me today. I'm very excited about this call. Let me just go over my notes here. What I'm going to cover today is some common cover letter or value proposition letter mistakes and how to learn how to write something that is a compelling piece of marketing material. And this gets into mindset, how we view ourselves and how we communicate our value and why we communicate it this way, why it's important. So hopefully you'll be taking away a lot more than just a template of how to do these, but rather understanding the mindset behind it, because it all plays into your ultimate success. I have a lot of people when I write these, oh my goodness, I thought that was muted. I have a lot of people when I write these cover letters that will balk at them and say, wow, that's different than I've ever seen. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Or I've even had people tell me this sounds too salesy or too aggressive, which actually I think it's just the opposite. And I always find that interesting. Of course, I welcome those thoughts and feelings because I want people to be upfront with me so I know what they're dealing with so I can help them overcome that. And we'll work through it. And ultimately, what happens is people will come back and say, wow, I just cannot believe the response I got. In fact, I just had one. This happens with resumes, too. I just had one this morning. A client from New Zealand, very high-level sales engineer, who balked and kicked and screamed, which is unusual, but sometimes with engineers this happens, the whole time. And until finally, he ended up accepting the resume, using the resume, just got a position with a huge, huge Fortune 100 company, very successful, very well thought of, and a 20% raise, and he did it in 3 weeks. And so now, of course, he's a reformed skeptic, and so he's asking me, will you write my wife's resume, and this and that, and that. And so it's okay to be skeptical as long as with facts and some explanation you're willing to embrace and say, all right, I'm going to step outside what I know, my comfort zone, and try this because I believe it's going to help improve my odds and accentuate my career and help me align with my career goals so that I get the ultimate end game, more interviews and bigger offers. So the value proposition letter, I used to write normal, what would be, I guess, described as good cover letters, and a lot of people still do. And there's nothing wrong with that. But many, many years ago, I would say 7 years ago, I ran into my mentor, who is now deceased. He passed away last year. But my mentor, who I talk about a lot, Mark Hovind. And Mark Hovind had a company called JobBait. And his mentor was John Lutt, who wrote that book, Rites of Passage, for six-figure and seven-figure executives, which is still, I believe, a bestseller, and on Amazon, a top seller on Amazon. And I was looking through his website, and I called him because I was really impressed. And he was very short with me, and, who are you, and what do you want, and all of these things. And the more we got to talking, the more he warmed up, and he became a very gracious mentor and helped me a lot in my career. But one of the things he did was describe to me why these value proposition letters work so well. And he learned his tricks of the trade. I'll just sort of reveal this all to you, how it's all connected, from our mutual friend, Jill Conrath, who wrote a book, I believe it's also a bestseller, called Snap Selling. Jill is a really a consummate sales trainer and wonderful salesperson, and just authentic, how to sell, if you're going to sell, how to sell authentically. And so she had taught Mark about the value proposition letter. I don't know whether she was inspired by someone else. It's as far back on the timeline as I go, but or she created it herself. But it's brilliant. So he was inspired by her, and then I was inspired by Mark. And one of the things that struck me initially was how short it was. And he says, yes, I do not write cover letters over 125 words, because what you're ultimately trying to do is answer a very blunt question in a very short period of time, which is, what good are you to me, and why should I be reading this? So when you approach somebody, whether you know them or whether for the first time, one of the things that we all need to do is speak from the results, not how, but what happens when. So it's the results that get people's attention, and then you can go into greater detail or a more lengthy explanation after that, if you like. So that was the first thing. And when I read the value proposition letter the first time, I said, this just makes perfect sense. Would you teach me how to do this? And so that was the beginning of my learning experience with my mentor. And Mark only wrote these value proposition letters for 6- and 7-figure executives. The neat thing about them is I have found they work for everybody, as did Mark, because when he wasn't helping those executives, he actually taught a class, I think, down at the library, the YMCA, in a couple of the different places that he lived, Las Vegas and somewhere right outside of, was it, Seattle, Washington, I believe. He would teach people of all walks of life and all different career titles and positions and industries how to write these value proposition letters and use them to their advantage. So I'm going to be showing you a couple different variations today and going through those verbally. And then after we're done with today's call, I'll be providing you with a bonus ebook, some notes, a 15-point checklist, and some templates for you. So you'll have this call and then everything you need to follow along and to use this for yourself as time goes on. So the great thing is you learn this once and basically you have it in your toolbox for the rest of your career. So let's jump right in. First, I want to cover my first bullet point, which is the most common cover letter mistake that leads to qualified professionals being passed over. Many times when people are looking at their marketing collateral, which is there's online and offline, your online would be like your LinkedIn profile and your offline would be such as your resume and your letter, the emphasis is on the resume, which is correct, but in order to get them to read the resume, we have to put a cover letter. And a cover letter shouldn't be an afterthought, and it shouldn't be a white paper. So the most common cover letter mistake that I've seen in looking at thousands of these throughout the years is they're just too long. Big blocks of text do not get read. Another example, this is endorsements. If you're sending somebody testimonials or endorsements, many times for my top executive clients and I'm developing several different pieces of marketing collateral for them, I'll develop a sheet or a page called endorsements. And what I'll do is I'll take a big block of text, maybe a 2-paragraph letter, and I will pick out the one sentence that captures the essence. There's always one sentence of the whole message that that person is conveying in that 1 or 2 paragraphs, and I will put quotes around it, and that will be the endorsement. I don't alter it. I just take the part out that is the juiciest, because I've learned throughout the years that if you create endorsements that look more like the back of a book jacket versus big, long blocks of text, big paragraphs, the former will get read, the latter will get passed over. They'll read 1 or 2 of the first sentence of the first endorsement, and then they'll go to something else. You can't keep people's attention. Maybe you used to be able to a certain degree before in the past. I don't, you know, have any, I'm just guessing, you know, wild guess there, but now you just can't. The way that we communicate and the information that we're required to sort of filter through on a daily basis, I think, is it just leads to a shorter attention span. So we're looking for the right information faster. So when we put it down on paper, it's the skill in which we hit the bullseye, in which we encapsulate the message and communicate it in a very condensed and distilled way that focuses on your results, that captures the attention and keeps people reading. And there's lots of ways to do this and lots of tricks, I guess you could call them, and I use them a lot in resumes. For example, and I realize I'm sort of zigzagging here, I promise I'll stick to the point, but just I want to give you the overall feeling and the spirit in which I'm trying to convey. We want to communicate our skills and strengths and why focusing on the end result is so important. When I create a resume, let's say somebody has a bullet point and it says, I went in and turned a department around that had been that was getting ready to be closed down because it just wasn't profitable, and I drove revenue of $5 million in just under 12 months. Well, that's nice, but you shouldn't make the person read till the end of the line to get to the $5 million in 12 months because you might lose them. They might not read it all. But if you flip it on its head and you say, drove $5 million in 12 months, a flailing division, et cetera, then you capture their attention and they go, how'd he do that? Or how'd she do that? And then you keep them reading. So that's the spirit in which you want to approach these. So I don't even put why. I don't go into why or how in the value proposition letter. I just focus on the results, because if you can bring the results, then you have earned the right to talk to them further. Okay, so the most common cover letter mistakes: too long, too dense, outlining soft skills and why you're qualified for something versus results, and being in your language either too passive or too salesy and aggressive. Usually it's one or the other. It's pithy or it's just way too on the nose. And the neat thing about results is results speak for themselves, so you don't have to put any flowery lingo or passive, supporting statements about what a wonderful boss you are, how much of a team player you are. We're selling facts. So you're taking all the facts that make the argument for you being in a specific place, and we're sort of, you know, giving it to them in just this short, distilled message. All right. So with the value proposition letter, what we're trying to focus on, our end goal is we're answering questions. What good are you to me? What do you want? What's in it for me? Why should I talk to you? Why should I care? And really, it's very short-sighted. It doesn't go beyond that. Those are the questions that you have to answer no matter what platform or medium or relationship you have with somebody that you are connecting with, that you are suggesting that you have further conversations, whether it's a cold call or a cold letter or answering a position for a job in a job board or responding to a recruiter. We still have that. It's still on us to answer these basic questions, and the answer should be very clear, very compelling, and parsed out in metrics. So you need to phrase in percentage or dollars, because key decision makers, HR to a certain extent, recruiters to a certain extent, want to know what you accomplish and not what you do. So the more you measure, the more it counts. Taking this right from something that Mark told me a long time ago. And Mark had an interesting thing that he used to say. I turn lead into gold at $50,000 per day. I can't read or write. I dropped out of fifth grade. I lie on the couch till 3 o'clock every day, and I'm overweight. But I do turn lead into gold at $50,000 per day. Would you like some? So that's the hook right there. All right. Hang on one second. So, I'm going to go over some step-by-step strategies to create a cover letter that is very powerful and gets results just like I've been talking about. So the first thing that you need to write one of these before you even start writing the letter is you have to know what you're writing to. So you have to be focused. In other words, you have to understand what it is you're going for in order to properly communicate your value. The more you generalize, the more steam you lose. Often a common thing I'll hear is people will say, yeah, but I don't want to close myself off to potential opportunities because I'm too targeted or too focused. I understand completely. However, we don't have the luxury, if we ever did, of not being focused, because these days, a job seeker or a small business owner like myself, we have the same job, which is we have to be able to answer that question very quickly. Why should I care? Why should I be reading this? I do it on my website, and you have to do it in your value proposition letter. So you have to be able to say your value is in sales. If you're changing industry from medical device to some other type of manufacturing hardware, you've got to be able to say, okay, this is my game plan. This is what I'm doing. I'm not focusing on this anymore. I'm going to focus my sales, aptitudes, and all my transferable skills over to this new industry. That's a focus. So even though you're changing industries, you're focused. You know what you want. And so it takes a little bit of due diligence. If you are in software and you want to stay in software and you want to go from working for a $50 million company to a billion-dollar multinational company and you want to move to South America, that's a focus. So getting focused involves doing a little bit of studies, and usually the study involves, and this is fun for most people, it's fun, involves understanding what you want for you and your family. How much money, the range you basically want to be in, where you want to go, just sitting down and, you know, getting clear on that, where you want to live. And I always tell you, when I talk to my clients for the first time and we're doing a little intake session, I'll say, where do you want to live? And they say, well, I'd move anywhere for the right position. But what is the right position? Oh, they can't tell me. So we're in action phase when we should still be backing up and being looking phase and due diligence phase, because all those things have to be sussed out before, not along the way. Because when you course correct along the way, when you've invested money in your marketing materials, it's an expensive mistake. You don't want to be shoring up your focus of direction when you're 5 weeks into something or 10 weeks into something. You want to have this all done before. So we want to, first of all, assess our goals, how much money we need, where we would like to live. Always go for the low-hanging fruit, what you want first, as long as it's reasonable. I mean, if you're in textiles in North Carolina, maybe you should look at a different industry. But if, you know, your area has some opportunities and your economic development commission there in your town is doing some good things and bringing some companies into town, and there's areas that are buoyant and growing and healthy and stable, or, you know, your industry is pretty sizable in your area and there's a lot of things to choose from, a lot of healthcare, a lot of hospitals, a lot of outplacement facilities, whatever it may be, then, you know, again, you're just sort of getting that, you're working your bullseye, you're putting legs on your strategy. And so, and it's generally much easier to just say, well, look, out of all the things I could possibly want, I want this the most. And you can get to that place rather quickly by doing a little bit of soul searching and then also fishing where the fish are. Figure out, use Google News Alerts, figure out what industries are moving and growing and developing in your area. Look at the Chamber website. Look at the Economic Development Commission website. Read your local business journal. I mean, it's fairly easy to figure out, you know, create a Google News Alert called Industry Growth Plus New Hampshire or, you know, New Jersey or California or wherever it is that you are. And get that focus down and try to go after industries that are healthy and buoyant. You know, if you have to shift from, you know, one particular type of medical device to maybe something else that has similarities and it's not totally different but it's close enough, I say that's a pretty good poker hand right there. You know, so you basically want to try to connect the dots and strategically figure out what works best for you and what meets all of your driving motivators. So at the end of the day, you feel like you didn't make big concessions or, you know, take huge risks and that your job search strategy, you know, really didn't work out for you, and then you end up trying to recalibrate in a year or two from now. So you want to try to make the right decision the first time. So Your focus affects your value proposition letter because that's how you can properly communicate your value. If you're changing industries, then you focus on your position value. If you're changing industries and position, then you basically use the value proposition letter and some representative job titles to match up the things that they're asking for with the things that you already have. So you're playing connect the dots. So again, that's a very necessary step before you continue on. Now, when we talk about just another little bit on value, when we shift our value and the way we see our value and we take ownership and control over it, you will find yourself shifting from, well, I just want to see what's out there. Well, I don't want to close myself off to opportunities. Well, I just want to see what kind of nibbles I get. And if you've already been through that, then you'll know that most of the time that journey today is disappointing, especially if you're using the internet as a medium. And you shift it from, I know what I want, I know what I'm going after, and here is my value, you'll start feeling empowered, and it will start with your marketing collateral, and it will carry over in your interviews, which is why a lot of times when things click into place and you start to understand, oh, you know, yes, I'm an employee, whether you be a mid-manager or vice president or entry-level or CEO, I don't care, but you're teaming with a company to get something done, but you are still responsible, just as I am, for transmitting, for communicating the value that you bring to the table. You cannot, and I used to do this too, and I see a lot of people doing it. I'm not exactly sure I can word for word explain it, but I can always sort of understand when somebody is sort of approaching things like, especially with 20-year-plus executives who've done a lot, they've accomplished a lot, and they try to stuff everything into their resume, which ends up to be about 5 pages. I know that the spirit in which they're approaching things is, well, somebody out there is going to see how good I am and all these things that I can do, and they're going to find a place for me. So if you feel, if you hear yourself thinking that way in that, then it's time to close that chapter of the book and say, no, what I need to do is be a little bit more self-directed and empowered in my search. And there's nothing more disempowering than looking at jobs on job ads, too. I can really compound and exacerbate that kind of thinking. So if you do look at jobs on job ads, look at it in order to get a baseline of perspective on, I'm just using these as sort of tools as part of my research. What are people looking for? Where are they hiring? What industries are growing? What kind of things are they saying? You know, if they're asking over and over and over again in 20 different job ads for an MBA, you might want to enroll. If they're asking over and over again for Six Sigma Green Belt or you know, lean process, you know, improvement type of qualifications, and or your PMP certification, your project management certification, then, you know, you might want to enroll in a class and just integrate that as part of your resume or in your value proposition letter. So you're gleaning opportunities to kind of understand what the market is asking for, and you're doing that through assessing running themes. Do I see a running theme? You don't have to go out and get everything everybody is asking for on their wish list of their perfect employee, but you can use it to strategize. So use it as a strategy and look through it at that lens. Create a spirit which is a empowerment. If you have been in a long job search and you have been frustrated, you need to stop and say, today is a new day. Now I'm going to be more directed about what I want, and I'm going to bullseye on that as long as it's a healthy market and I feel like I have the qualifications to get in there, and I'm going to give it my 110% and hustle like heck and penetrate that market before I try a plan B. Because if you go, well, this is my three markets, and you try to hit all three at once, you'll most likely find yourself spreading yourself pretty thin. So it's best to pull back and say, out of all the things I want this the most. This is what would be best for me and my family. So you go after that first and exhaust that first before going to the next thing. Okay, so how do we start these letters off? The tone of a value proposition letter is an informal me to you, informal speak. So you start it off with, you know, are you looking for, do you want, or do you need? If you're answering a job ad, you could have that be a happy coincidence that you email or you sent them this value proposition letter, not email. It doesn't work. Hard mail only works with these most of the times. But do you want or do you need? Or if you wanted to, you could certainly say, I'm responding to your ad for a vice president of operations. And then you just keep the second line of the value proposition letter the same. So usually when you're augmenting these value proposition letters, you're only changing the first line. And this is a place where you can start out very simple and very clear. So you might say, are you looking for a competent vice president of operations? So it's really, really simple. There's no flowery lingo. There's no filler. It's just very simple, very, very direct. And then the second line, in fact, let me just read you a value proposition letter. And I'm going to give you these templates. So you would start off with just your name and your address. If you've had your resume professionally done, don't cut and paste all the, you know, the keywords and stuff up top. That's just, you don't need that jewelry at the top. That you want them hyper-focused on exactly every single word that you're saying. So you should leave all that stuff off. Name, your address, your email. And you say, dear sir or madam, or, it, you know, if you're addressing, kind of doing a mass emailing, or if it's the CEO of a company, then you say, dear Bill, or dear Susan. So here's one of the value proposition letters I'm going to give you. Dear Susan, would you like help managing your way through this tough economy? That's one way that you can, would you like help? Do you want? Do you need? Second line, as executive sales director for a Fortune 100 financial services company, I created record growth in earnings by developing strong analytics and performance-based metrics for both sales and service. Okay, let's look at the first line here. As executive sales director for a Fortune 100 financial services company. So some people might say, as executive sales director for ABC Financial Services, but we don't want to do that because, number one, we don't want to mentally put a focus on another company. We're making this about them, not and that's done in sort of a that's done in a way where you're sharing who what your value can be to them. So unless you worked for, I don't know, Google or Coca-Cola or something that's really splashy and you know that that's going to grab their attention, that would be my only exception to that rule. Now, if this person was leaving finance, then I might say, as executive sales director for a Fortune 100 service-based company, because then you're still setting the stage, executive sales director for a Fortune 100 company, that's a pretty high-level position. That's still saying a lot. If you're moving out of financial services into something else, then there's no reason to say for a Fortune 100 financial services company. If you're staying in financial services, then absolutely you have to leave that in. Okay, so that is, out of all the VPLs I write, I mean, that line pretty much stays the same. That is an anchor line where I pretty much always say the same thing. I'm trying to establish the person's title, and I'm trying to establish the general company and or industry, if it's relevant, that they are coming from. Okay. I created growth in earnings by developing strong analytics and performance-based metrics for both sales and service. So that's saying a lot in a very few words, and it's not flowery and it's not full of fluff and filler. My accomplishments include increased EBIT 67, shouldn't that be EBITDA? I'll have to check on that, but I increased EBIT 67% in 3 years. Increased loan value 116% in 4 years. Increased credit quality and compliance by 37%. Okay. Increased EBIT, I think that's EBITDA, EBITDA, right? I don't know. But 67% in 3 years. So notice I'm not just saying where 67%. Where I can, I'll put in the time frame that you did it within. Increased it in 3 years. That's huge. Because if you just read that you increased it 67%, that could be in 1 year, in 12 years, what? So you're giving the reader some baseline of perspective. And notice that I'm not going into why or how I did it on any of these lines, because it doesn't matter. What matters is that this person did this. You bring them in for the interview to find out how. Increased loan volume 116% in 4 years. Well, that's awesome. Let's bring them in. Increased credit quality and compliance by 37%. Obviously, there wasn't a timeline metric for whatever reason that we were able to put on that last bullet. Still powerful, but that's why it's the third one and not the first one. Okay. So, did you reduce client complaints by 67% in your first 90 days? Did you improve processes or double employee satisfaction or drive it 100% in your first 12 months? So look through your accomplishments and then look through the types of positions that you're going after and play connect the dots and pick out the first two or three things that you can measure. And when you're measuring these, you know, you might not be able to say 116%. That's a fodder for another call that I'm going to do on performance and leadership and how to keep track of all these things and develop thought leadership in your industry. But let's say that you haven't kept track of this for whatever reason. Well, that's okay. You know, you can call somebody and say, hey, you know, John, that project that we did, would you say that that doubled our revenue in 3 years? And if John says, oh, at least, then, you know, you've got your approximate number that you can use. And that leads me to my next point, which is that you have to remember that we're just trying to show scale. We're trying to give someone a basic baseline of perspective on the size and scope of which we've worked and the size of our accomplishments and achievements, which is why we say things like, you know, if you want to work for a big company and you've got big numbers, then right up at the top you have to put P&L to 500 million, teams to 2,000, or oversaw, four continents, or was in charge of North and South America and Asia Pacific. Those short sound bites and things that you are parsing out help someone understand without forcing them, which is irritating to most everybody, to read through a big block of text to try to extrapolate this information so they can figure out what the next step is. So these should be not on your value proposition letter in most cases, but sometimes it helps just to slip a couple of these in here. And again, if you have to be approximate, it's not a legal document, it's a marketing piece, and you're just trying to show basic measurements. Okay. Although my recent compensation has been north of $200,000, I would love to explore opportunities with a significant stake in the outcome. Please call or email, and let's arrange a time to chat. Okay, so first of all, everyone screams, you're not supposed to mention money, you know, and that is true. But notice what we're saying here. Although my recent compensation has been north of $200,000, we don't know if that's base plus whatever. We have no idea. And what's north? It could be $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. So you could say, although my recent compensation has been in the low six figures, you could say, although my recent compensation has been north of $50,000, and why would you do this? You would only really do this out of respect for the person that is reading your letter because, again, you're trying to give them enough information to make a good decision. You're not saying that your compensation is $73,546, and offering to show them your W-2, because if you do that, that's, as most people understand, and rightly so, that is the kiss of death, because then that number is their touchstone, and you will have a very hard time separating yourself from that number. So they may pay a lot less, and then you lose out on the job. They might pay a lot more, and then you get a lowball offer. So you definitely don't want that, but why wouldn't you want a range, a basic range, so that you don't have to field, I don't know, $30,000 a year bogus positions? Or if it's a $650,000 a year job that, you know, is going to be way over your head. I mean, there's times that that just might not, you know, work out for you. So if you just say, if you have a range and you say, well, basically I want to be somewhere between $150,000 to $450,000, when you start getting up into the six figures, bonuses and commissions and things like that start playing a little bit larger role. And so most executives are used to that. They're making, you know, $250,000 to $350,000, $250,000 to $450,000, $250,000 to $550,000 and $650,000 sometimes. So I think executives are comfortable with those ranges. They get that. Now, at a little bit more of a lower level, you could do the same thing, and you could say, all right, let's look at my salary. I make $45,000 a year. But on top of that, I get a computer. They give me a car allowance. I get vacation time. I have great health benefits. I have life insurance. I get a bonus. That's all worth, what did I say, $45,000? That's all worth $10,000. And I started at $45,000, but now I'm at $50,000. And so really, my range now is between $45,000 and $60,000. You see how that works? So when you're in your interviews, you can say, you know, and they say, well, how much do you make, or how much do you need, or what are you looking for? You can say, well, for the last several years, I've been in the mid to high five figures. You've given them something which satisfies them. What are they going to say? Well, what exactly was it? Right? Now, very few people are going to be that bold and brazen to say that. And you're not pigeonholing yourself or connecting yourself to an exact figure that's going to maybe get you in trouble, because it's like gambling. You have no idea whether the figure you throw out is good, bad, and who knows. So this is a really nice way of saying, well, really, for the last few years, my salary has been between $45,000 and $60,000, or between $40,000 and $60,000. And since you brought it up, did you have a range of mind budgeted for this position? Yes, it's $65,000. Ah, beautiful. And then you don't talk about it again until you get your offer. But again, now I'm going off on another tangent. So let's come back around. This works in the value proposition letter, because we're just sort of putting out a figure, not too high, not too low, just a general range, so they understand where you're starting these conversations. It's been north of six figures. It's been in the low six figures. It's been north of 500,000. It's been north of a million. I mean, some people make a lot of money. So whatever it is for you, That's what we say, and we keep it very general. And if you are not comfortable putting that figure in, you don't have to. You can just leave it out. What if you've been making, I've had clients say, I made too much. I made $800,000 last year. I only need $250,000. Okay, well, we're not going to bring that up then. Or they could say their recent comp has been north of $250,000, which is true. It's been $850,000, right? Or what if you've been making 30 and you've been grossly underpaid because it was a labor of love for you, but you really should be making, between 70 and 90. Well, then we might not want to bring this up right now and figure out a way that we're going to explain that diplomatically and eloquently in an interview. So although my recent comp has been north of 200, I would love to explore opportunities with a significant stake in the outcome. This person is willing to take some risk, so they're willing to take some pay on the back end. Another thing you can say, what if you've been fired or laid off? My company recently was acquired, and now I'm looking for new opportunities. My company recently reorganized overseas. And I'm currently vetting new opportunities in the such and such market. So there's ways to explain it that will retain your confidence, right? Please call me or email me and let's arrange a time to chat. You can say that in many cases. That's all you need. Or you could say, I'll follow up with a phone call by Friday or in a few days to see if you're interested in continuing the conversation or to make sure that you receive the correspondence or to see if you're interested in talking. And I like that approach, to see if you're interested, because you're not assuming anything and your results have already spoken for themselves. So I don't think there's a reason to be pushy. What we're trying to do is create intrigue and allure, and you can't create intrigue by being pushy. So that's why I've never really understood it when people say, oh, I think this letter's too salesy. I don't understand. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. Why you think this is salesy, but just try it. And they try it, and they go, oh, my God, this is wonderful. So last part of the letter is a P.S. And in the P.S., you usually, what I like to do is put something really splashy. I've excelled at every sales position I've ever held. I recently earned my MBA from Wharton. I'm reputed for my award-winning ability to expand teams internationally. Something really powerful. One statement. One simple statement. In a letter, the PS always gets read. It always gets read. I don't know why. It's a bit marketing thing. They say, always sign your name in blue ink and always put a PS because the PS always gets read. So something very small. And then after that, you can say, if you'd like to learn more, please see my website, johnsmith.com. And you can grab your own name on GoDaddy and set up something for free on Weebly and create your own simple website. And there you can put your resume. Or you say, see my LinkedIn profile here, and make sure you get a vanity link so it's not a bunch of numbers. And you put your LinkedIn address, LinkedIn/John Smith. And then, if they're interested, they can reach out to you. Now, we know this works because, again, Mark did a lot of split studies back in the day where he gave away free websites and for an opportunity to use clients' marketing materials to see what was getting the most response. And just sending value proposition letters got 6 times better response than sending a resume. And many, many of the executives commented that they would not have taken that person's call or even received the letter if they had a resume attached to it. Why? Because it will. If you're sending to a key decision maker, that letter will get circumvented by their assistant, and if there's a resume attached, they'll send it right to HR. So that is one argument for sending this letter alone and not sending it with a resume. And it works really, really well. All right. Let me see. I'm running out of time here. Let me read you another letter. This is one of my favorite letters because many people will say, well, I can't quantify what I do. I'm a business analyst. I'm a lawyer. I can't quantify what I do. I guarantee you we can all quantify what we do because we're all hired for a reason. And generally it's to make or save someone money or meet some type of end goal. And so it's the end goal that you want to talk about as much as possible. If you save, if you save seals off the coast of Monterey Bay, then you talk about the results of the study and how you stretched the budget 30% and got 6 months more out of it, or you saved 3,200 seals from destruction. You focus on what happened when, not what you did, but what happened when you did it. And here's a janitor that used this same strategy to quantify what he did. Now, I guarantee you most of us at first blush would say, well, you can't really quantify what a janitor does. I mean, he cleans, right? How do you put a result on that? All right, here's what he did, and he got this job. Mr. Decision Maker, President, CEO. Dear Kent, do you need a dependable janitor? As janitor for Widget Enterprises, I improved the cleanliness of their building, and I reduced maintenance costs more than any other janitor in the history of their company. Here are a few specifics. Save $20,000 per year by upgrading lighting fixtures to fluorescent. Reduced visitor waiting time to zero Notice he put a metric on that. By opening up on time for 3 years in a row. Notice how short these sentences are as well. They're very readable. Improved response time for maintenance issues 50% by implementing an email request for services system. It's brilliant. Somebody wrote me a long time ago. I don't remember who it was. Well, it wasn't a long time ago. Last year. And their comment on this, and I can't remember whether I was doing a blog post or what it was, but their comment was, you know, a lot of these people won't get jobs because people see them as too assertive. And I just thought to myself, wow, that is a fascinating comment because it really demonstrates how the lens we're looking through dictates everything, our attitude, what we think our success rate's going to be, how much we think we can achieve. It's almost like if I had written it one way, that person would have said one thing and said, well, that's not going to work because. And if I had written it the other way, they would have said the same thing. Well, that's not going to work because. But of course, this person landed a position, so that wasn't true, but interesting nonetheless. Our company was recently sold, and I'm looking for a position that allows me to contribute in a meaningful way. I should mention that my recent compensation has been north of $12 an hour. Our company, I'll read that again. Our company was recently sold, and I'm looking for a position, so he lost his job. Our company is recently sold. I'm looking for a position that allows me to contribute in a meaningful way. I should mention that my recent compensation has been north of $12 per hour. Please call me and let's explore how I can help you. Thank you. Sincerely, Marcus. And then he says, P.S. I was formally recognized by Widget Enterprises for my outstanding contributions. You can find details on my website at I'm sorry, that PS was for the letter above. That doesn't make sense. Okay, that PS was for the letter above. So, this is just a couple examples of how different people can use this letter. I had a gal, somebody had written me some questions, and they said, I think somebody said, I have some friends, I think it's in the healthcare industry, and would this work for healthcare? Would this work for such and such industry? I can't think of a case where this wouldn't work. I'm sure it's out there, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. In fact, there was a gal that called me. This was last year, and she called me crying because she had graduated with a radiology degree, and she had been looking for 6 months, and she was working at Whole Foods or Home Depot or something like that, and she couldn't find a position. And she thought her and all her friends, she said, we're all so stupid. We graduated with these degrees, not understanding that there are no radiology jobs in Texas. And I always take pause when I hear comments like that. I go, well, no, wait a minute, you know. And so after talking, I wrote her a value proposition letter. I redid her resume. She sent out 30 value proposition letters between Christmas and New Year's and got 6 interviews. She found companies within 50 miles of where they lived that were in healthcare and outplacement, and hospitals and doctor's offices and whatnot. Sent out the letters not to human resources, but to the office manager, vice president, or president, got 6 interviews, got 2 job offers, doubled her salary, went from 35 to 70, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And she used the value proposition letter. And she did what people will do sometimes with me. She balked. She said, well, this won't work. This won't work because. And I just continue to gently encourage her. Just try it. Just trust me. If it doesn't work, you can come back after you try it. We'll try something else. And these people become, you know, the best longest lasting clients that refer all their friends and colleagues, because they're the ones that really went through it, really struggle with seeing things a little bit differently and embracing something new, which I totally understand. There's nothing wrong with that, but you really do have to be very brave at some point and take that step forward and say, I'm going to just try this. It's going to be different, but I'm going to try it and see if it works. So this works for healthcare, this works for entry-level positions, mid-level positions, executive-level positions. The truth of the matter is it works better for entry and mid-level because, A, less of your competition is going to understand how important it is to quantify the value of what they bring. Secondly, there are more jobs available at your level. The higher up you go, the less jobs there are, the more letters you have to send out. And there's other things that executives do in their job search to tackle that. So let me just answer a few questions here, and then I'll stop recording and I'll answer your questions live if there are any. So one question is, how will a value proposition letter sound different if I'm writing to someone cold versus writing to someone that I may have met or heard speak somewhere else? You simply change the first line. The rest of the value proposition letter is speaking to your value, so it stays the same. So let's look at some case studies here. What would you say if you're writing a recruiter? You would say, hi, dear John Recruiter. Does one of your client companies need, or is one of your client companies looking for? Okay. Human resources. Is your company looking for my friend Sarah? Hi, Sarah. Thanks for requesting a copy of my resume. Here's a brief overview of what you were asking from me. Recently, as Vice President of Operations for a $10 billion da-da-da, right? So the rest of the letter stays the same. Key decision makers, do you want or do you need or are you looking for? Right? Venture capital or private equity firms, does one of your portfolio companies need? Does one of your portfolio companies need? And then once again at the end, if you think one of your portfolio companies would benefit from achievements like these, may we chat? Right? Growth opportunities. Maybe you read something and you want to follow up with a company. Maybe the first line says, I was reading about your recent expansion into South America in the Austin Business Journal. Congratulations. Are you looking for a senior vice president of business development to help leverage your expansion? To help leverage your revenue, and then the rest of the letter stays the same. So it's really only that that first line. So that essentially you're changing. I just want to recap. There were a couple more things I wanted to cover quickly, and I realize I've gone a little bit over. But I had written down, you know, I wanted to share with you all the trick that I use for adjusting the way that you see yourself and communicating your value to others. And I realize I've touched upon this a couple times in this call, but I really just want to drive home how very important it is to shift from telling people what it is that you do to what happens when you do it. And in order to do that, I found that it's most helpful if you think of yourself as an entrepreneur. You know, sometimes you see branding, you hear people saying, you're the CEO of you. It's that idea. Think of yourself as an entrepreneur. Think of yourself as a consultant, that you're owning your own business. And you have to work to identify your value and communicate it. You can't help anybody unless they hire you. And you can't rise to the fullness of your potential unless you have the right environment and you feel that they're compensating you at a level that makes you want to do good for them. No one wants to get into a situation and feel regretful or like they're being taken advantage of. So these are all noble reasons above I want more money, you know, to make sure that you're in alignment. You and that company are in alignment, and your part in this role is communicating why you deserve that. And some people, like I just recently did a resume for a sales rep that had been with a huge, huge company, one of the world's top companies. And she said after she saw her resume, she's thinking about herself in a whole new light. And it really, I had another friend, a friend of mine, Jeremy, that I recently did a resume for. And I'm talking resume, but the value proposition letter is the same idea. Jeremy said that he was able to land an interview and a position and triple his salary with a company that was a Fortune 100 energy company. And in his note that he wrote to me after he got the job and they moved to California, is he said, I never would have been able to go in there and interview with the confidence unless I had that marketing material, because it got me thinking about myself and my value in just a different way that just up-leveled the whole conversation. So what I'm trying to say is there are performance-type benefits to creating marketing material and thinking about yourself in a particular way that are going to affect other things too, that are also going to up-level all of your conversations and your energy and your initiative and your focus. Everything's going to rise, and it starts with this letter. And I had promised to share the one critical thing to leave out of your letter that will ensure more calls and interest, and that is, of course, your resume. You want to leave your resume out and just try it. Just try sending a letter and making sure your LinkedIn profile looks good or your website looks good, and send these letters out. And then in some cases, if you're doing more of a mass mailing, you can wait for them to call you, or you can follow up with a phone call. I find if you follow up with a phone call, that's just, you're showing more initiative, you're hustling, and you don't have to say, again, you know, you're not closing the sale. In fact, you're really short-sighted also on your phone calls. You simply want to say, first of all, let me just approach this quickly so I can carry it through for you, so you can see how this works. Let's say that you saw that a big company is moving into town. They are a truck parts manufacturer. It's in perfect alignment with your expertise. You read about it in the Business Journal, and now you want to send them a letter. So you say, Dear John, congratulations on your recent expansion to my town. So excited to have you here. Are you possibly looking for a sales manager that can da-da-da-da? And then at the end, you're going to say, I'll follow up with a phone call to see if you're interested in a few days. So you call him, and the secretary answers, John Smith's office. And then you're going to say, if you're still employed, you're going to say, Hi, this is Bryce Willis with the sales manager for Toyota, and I'm following up with, what did I say the guy's name was? Following up with John in regards to his recent expansion into San Antonio. So you have front-loaded all the conversation. You've front-loaded everything, and so you've broken that gatekeeper's cadence, because how the cadence usually goes is John Smith there? And you say, oh, may I ask who's calling? Oh, it's Bryce. Well, Bryce who? And where are you from? And what is it regarding? Let me see if he's available. So they are used to going through this thing, and that gives them more control and confidence, and it backs you off. So now you are taking leadership, and you're saying, here's who I am, here's who I'm calling, here's what I want. You're not telling them, and you will never tell them, I'm looking for a job, I'm following up on an opportunity, I'm doing some networking, nothing like that. And if they push you, you say, it's private. It's private. Well, I'm following up on my correspondence regarding your expansion. Well, what about the expansion? Well, I send them some correspondence. If there's a problem, I'm happy to take his voicemail. In other words, if you're going to be an idiot, I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound brazen, but, you know, that's the spirit in which, forgive me, sir, I don't mean to throw you into a hissy fit. I'll be happy to have voicemail if that's available, or leave a message. No, let me see if he's available. Hold on one moment. So you'll find that trick actually, and I learned this when I was a recruiter. I only had to do this 7,000 times a day. So after several years, I finally got something that I figured out that worked. And then I had several recruiter friends, too, and we would swap strategies. So, you know, and all these are not intended to be tricky and to be sneaky. It's to get done what you're trying to get done in a reasonable time frame without hurting anybody or offending anybody in the process. So that's the end game. You just want to talk to John. And all you're going to say to John when he answers the phone, John Smith, is you're going to say, you know, hi, John, my name is Will. I'm forgetting my name. Hi, my name is Willis. And I'm following up on the correspondence that I sent you to see if you're interested in talking. So why would I say it like that? You know, it's not a hardcore sales. You need to hire me. I'm the best at it. It's nothing like that. It's because after doing this for so long and talking to so many people about what works and what doesn't, I found that the only thing that I know to be true and to be the most helpful is to focus on one goal and one goal only, and that is the goal for the value proposition letter is we want to show them that we're worth talking to. The goal for the phone call is you want them to hear a nice, normal, stable human being who sounds like somebody that they might be interested in talking with that just takes it one more step past the letter. Nice voice, nice letter. That's all. When I was a recruiter, I had to talk to so many candidates, and I heard everything. And don't think that it's like bad employee equals bad phone manners. It's not like that at all. You can have a superstar employee, and the guy is a real jerk on the phone. And as a recruiter, that was a very difficult situation for me, and I had to ask myself, is it worth it for me to take the time and energy it's going to take to try to help this person without hurting his feelings and making him mad, understand that his attitude or the way he's coming across is going to hurt him? And I took a lot of those deals on as a woman, and I tried to, as a sympathetic woman, I tried to turn a lot of them around, and I ended up wasting some people's time and having some lie deals go south because the person's accomplishments didn't match up with the personality. They wanted a good personality, and a good, stable person is somebody that sounded nice, like somebody worth working with and talking to more. So when you're making those introductions, that's all you want to do. And whatever they say, they may say, we're not hiring right now. They may say, you have to talk to HR. They may say, how did you get my name? They may say, I'm getting ready to go to lunch. I can't talk right now. Could you call back later? And they may say, I'm so glad to hear you're calling me, John, because I've got your letter on my desk and was hoping that you might be able to come down next week. I want to put you with my vice president of operation who's in charge of the expansion that's going to be next month, and your timing's really good. Was very impressed by your initiative or whatever. Or, you know, keep talking. Tell me a little bit more. Can you send me a resume? So you have to know how to respond to all of those things. And you also have to know that there are going to be cases where the timing's not going to be right and that conversation isn't going to move forward, and there's absolutely no reason to be upset about that. When people call me, I guarantee you not everybody is my client. Not everybody is my client. I probably field 20 or 30 calls a week, and I take, or it's a match, for only a certain number of those people, and that ensures I'm what they want, they're what I want, everybody's happy. I've assessed accurately that I can indeed help them. I don't help people that I don't think I can help or maybe helped better by somebody else. That's not nice, right? So, I mean, you know, and the same is true for you. Not everybody you call is going to be a match for you, and you're not going to be a match for them. So there's no reason to get upset because we're just kind of going through a numbers game. So if they say something that, you know, time is right, okay, absolutely no problem. Thank you so much for taking my call. If anything changes, please let me know. That's all you have to say. And, you know, I had a guy that sent a letter to Motorola who did this. He did it with the HR department. They called him, but they said, I'm sorry, we just don't have anything right now. He said, well, that's okay. Please keep my information. Thanks so much for taking my call. If anything changes, let me know. I have three friends that work for Motorola. They say that you all are the best company that they have ever worked for. And I I find that really exciting. So, and they said, oh, thank you so much. They called him back a week later and said, we were just so impressed by your demeanor over the phone and your resume. We knew this is coming up next month. We wanted to call you early to schedule you first to come in to interview for the position if you're still available. So a lot of times it's just, you never know when you're planting those seeds, what kind of good conversations are going to come back to benefit you as things unfold. So let me turn it over here. I'm going to take the call off record, and I'm going to open it up to see if anybody has a few questions. I apologize. I understand I've gone a little bit over, but I hope it's been helpful. Let me also say, too, before I stop recording, that I have a 15-point checklist. I have a three value proposition letter templates, and I have some notes that are going to be available on the same page with the audio of this phone call, so that if you feel like I didn't give you a step-by-step, or it's hard sometimes because you're listening to my voice and you don't have a visual, it's all going to be there. So please, after this call, go in and grab those templates, look at the checklist. It's really going to be helpful to just round everything out. Okay, thanks, everybody. I'll click back here in just a second.